This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're broadcasting our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse, from a pop-up storefront space in downtown Hartford. It's part of the iConnect project that is meant to liven up some empty spaces downtown. You're welcome to come by our location here on Trumbull Street. It's right under the big billboard for the Excel Center. It's in Hartford 21. We'll be talking more about iConnect in just a little bit. As always, we'll be talking about the news of the week, but we're going to be focusing in on Hartford. And first of all, I want to welcome in Colin McEnroe, of course, who always joins us in the wheelhouse, the host of the Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR. How do you like our space here, Colin?
I love this space, actually. I think it's a great space. I came in, I was a little depressed because the MacArthur Genius Grants came out, and again, I did not get one.
I'm sorry,
but this cheered me up.
This is, well, it's a good space.
Probably if I were more of a genius, I wouldn't get cheered up so easily.
Colin McEnroe will be here throughout the course of our program. Jenna Carlesso is here. She's a reporter for the Hartford Current, and she writes the City Line blog. Jenna, good to see you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And Ken Goslin is here. He's a business writer for the Hartford Current. Hi, Ken.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
In just a little bit, we'll be bringing Greg Bordonato from the Hartford Business Journal. Got a lot of Hartford journalists here today to talk to the mayor of the city of Hartford, who'll be joining us for the first part of our program. Pedro Segarra is with us once again. First of all, Mayor, thank you for putting us up in this space. Good to see you once again.
Thank you. It's great to be here. And Mr. Goslin, I supported your nomination. I pushed for you, so I'm equally perturbed. That
and we see what happened. We see how much clout you have.
Well, here's what I'd like to talk about first is we're in a space that has something to do with something called iConnect. And we've reported on it a little bit. We've talked about it a bit on our air. What is iConnect exactly?
iConnect is a way for us to work with small businesses and others who have an interest in creating small businesses in our city and try to provide that assistance in order to infuse life in the retail sector, in the business sector in downtown. So we're very glad that we're going to start with three businesses in October. It's been a six-month process. We're very excited about it because I think it's a wonderful opportunity just to infuse that life that we seem to have this crescendo. But that crescendo that's going on in the city doesn't work very well if you don't have the retail component. So as we worked in building the additional 1,000 units in the downtown to get more foot traffic, as we bring in UConn, we want to make sure that we also put some effort on building the small businesses and the retail.
So this project was funded with some state money, and then there was some federal money that I think went through the city, about $65,000 to do this. I know you wanted to start it much earlier than it actually got started. It's taken a while to happen. In part, it's taken a while because, you know, the relationship with these landlords that have all this vacant space downtown, it's not always as easy as it perhaps could be. Maybe you can talk about some of the struggles about getting iConnect going and actually on track this year, because it was supposed to be started beginning of the summer.
Well, actually, I think New Haven took like 6 months before they got their first store open. We started this process, I believe, in April, so we're on track in terms of the experience that New Haven had. It was initially a challenge to get the landlords on board, but the fact that we are where we are gives me hope that we can continue to accelerate the pace of working with the landlords and get more of these storefronts open.
Ken Goslin, I know that you cover real estate in the area. Maybe you just talk first briefly about who owns a lot of the space in downtown Hartford. When we talk about vacant retail space, a space like iConnect, I mean, who are we dealing with here?
Well, of course, Northland owns this whole area here, this where we're the space that we're in here, all the way down in the Excel Center. And there's several landlords on Pratt Street that have, you know, several buildings there. And I think that from my conversations with some of them, the problem that they had with, you know, signing these short-term leases is they have carrying costs. So you have to figure out, okay, we want to, be at a reduced rate, but how can we still cover our costs, and especially for a short period of time?
What do you think, Mayor, about getting all the vacant space activated downtown, not just the spaces that we're talking about here, but as you walk around Hartford, you see some very vibrant local businesses, you see some chain stores, and then you see lots of spaces that you need to fill. What's the long-term plan? Because it can't all be iConnect.
It cannot be all iConnect, and in this space are, or adjacent to this space, we have banks that have come in the last couple of years. We have universities that have come in and continue to expand. We have other tenants that have come in, which are very important in terms of having that mix, because you not only need the small businesses, you also need the larger businesses across the street. You saw a brand new Prudential Services bring in 200 employees. You have at the end of the street over at City Place, you have Harvard Pilgrim that just opened up last week. So I'm very excited. I'm very excited because for a long time, it seemed like we were losing places. We were getting more vacancy. And I think that with the state relocation of offices into the city, with 777 Main Street becoming residential, you're starting to see a shrinking of the empty space in the commercial space, in the offices. And I think that the trick is, or the strategy is, to make sure that we have as much of the retail and the office and the commercial rented, that whatever we are not using or not capable of using for businesses, that we can have that turn into residential use and build the population, the downtown populations. So I think we're really headed in a very positive direction.
We're going to be talking more with Greg Bordenaro of the Hartford Business Journal about some of the businesses coming downtown in just a bit. Turning to another story we've been reading about this week, Colin, we learned about how the company that manages the Keeney and Goodwin golf courses here in the city put in less than half the money the city required. The golf courses were described as falling into disrepair. What does this story sort of say to you, Colin? I mean, we were talking about it yesterday in the newsroom.
Well, first of all, just to put it a little bit in perspective, Keeney Park is potentially a fabulous asset. It may be the biggest public park in New England. It's almost 700 acres. It's enormous. It has on it a golf course, obviously. It has an equestrian center. It really can be this amazing thing and has in its history been this completely amazing asset. It's got a bunch of problems right now, some of which are controllable through really good management, some of which are going to be more controllable probably through issues like policing and just development around the area. But right now, I think, you know, what's happened right now, obviously, it's not just Keeney Park, it's Goodwin Park. But the Keeney Park is the one, obviously, that's in more distress. The golf course became unplayable. There were trees cut down. It seems as though there were more trees cut down than were supposed to be cut down. And I've been hearing now for months from people who want to be using the park and want to be using the golf course in particular, because that's a huge asset. It's actually a lot cheaper to play golf at Keeney Park than it is in a lot of other places. It's a thing that can really help the city. And it's, I think, frustrating to people. Like, how did this happen, and how did it happen over a period of years? I mean, this isn't something that just sort of popped up yesterday because the auditors figured it out.
Mayor, how'd this happen?
I agree. This is a beautiful, incredible jewel and resource that we have in our city. And unfortunately, it's been decades and decades of neglect. When I became mayor, you might recall that we had a big campaign to get more focus on the parks, and we got a Green Ribbon Commission. We've put an incredible amount of money into trying to fix our parks. At Keeney Park, for example, we did the roads. We've been working on the cricket fields. We've been working to restore and get some state involvement in terms of having the state take over the pond aspect, getting deep to get more involved. So there's a lot of activity. Unfortunately, this contract that was entered into before I was mayor really was not, was the manager didn't perform very well, as he did in other golf courses that are also facing the same issues out in East Hartford and other municipalities. The question now becomes is how do we take this as an opportunity to really get people working together, thinking together? We've put in our, I put in the capital improvement budget, $10 million for the restoration of both golf courses. We have to make sure that we invest that money wisely, that we create a system of management that ensures that our investments are protected, and we need to figure out a long-term strategy that in partnership with others, the nonprofits, corporate sector, the state, because our parks not only service our city, our parks are mostly a capital city system of parks. The people coming to our parks has been increasing dramatically.
Jen, I guess I'm wondering if you have a question for the mayor, and also maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what we're dealing with right now with this management company, though, this issue at hand.
Right. I think the lease runs out next month. It's a five-year lease that started under the previous mayor, Eddie Perez. I was just curious from the mayor. One of the recommendations that the audit commission had said was to create an exit strategy to get MDM to return the courses in the same condition that they were received. Is there a strategy in place?
Yeah, we've been discussing this issue internally with our city attorneys to see what is the capacity at the current time from this corporation that is very distressed in terms of being able to deliver that. So we are exploring that. As you said, this was something that this contract was entered into approximately 5 years ago by the previous administration. Our goal is to we're not renewing it. We're not going to do the business with these folks anymore. But whatever options we have in order to make them accountable, given whatever their likelihood of being able to reimburse us or provide some payment for us, we would pursue that. I think that in terms of audits, though, we have to be very careful to make sure that audits don't try to come up with the policy solution to fiscal problems, that there be some room for the policymakers, for the city council, for the Gulf Task Force, for the mayor's office to take responsibility for actually doing the management of that. So,
you know, I think that that's been a little puzzling to some of us watching this. Obviously, one of the things that's come forward, I think Jen has written about it, is this Corporation Council opinion that you and others sought about what the purview, what the scope of the Audit Commission's report should be. I think to a lot of us, first of all, with auditors, you want to give them a really free hand. The state auditors have a very free hand to talk about a lot of different things. It isn't this narrow focus that's just on the money, because it's never just about the money. The money spreads out into a whole bunch of other issues. And it did seem, Mr. Mayor, like this was kind of a warning shot across the bow of the Audit Commission, this legal opinion. You know, you guys are going places we don't want you to go. And I think the citizens might say, oh, no, go there. I mean, they did stuff like inspect aerial photographs to see when the trees were taken out. I was impressed by that kind of work. I don't know whether it counts as the right work of auditors, but I think a lot of us say, why not let them just, you know, have a free hand to look at whatever they want to look at?
I agree. As long as the audits are being done, we have to make sure that in the process of auditing, what we're looking for is for the best economic interest of the city to be sought after, and that you're not necessarily going in another direction that might present potential problems with what the citizens of Hartford have established to be the proper allocation of responsibilities within our government. In other words, it could get very confusing.
But aren't they essentially a watchdog? I mean, a watchdog is going to bump up against what you define as your responsibilities.
I don't think they do have some watchdog responsibilities as it relates to the finances of the city and the proper auditing function, but I want to be very careful that they only maintain themselves to the audit function, and that function is exercised across the board to all the different areas of responsibilities, and that it's not used in any other way that could present potential problems for our city.
We're downtown in Hartford today at a storefront space as part of the iConnect project. It's a space we broadcast from before, but it's a lot more spruced up than it has been. And so we'll be talking a bit more about that coming up on the program. Colin McEnroe, of course, joins us in the Wheelhouse each Wednesday. Also joining us is the mayor of the city of Hartford, Pedro Segarra. We have Jenna Carlesso from the Hartford Courant and Ken Gosselin from the Hartford Courant as well. We've got a few more minutes with the mayor, and I want to get to a few more issues here. There's an ongoing series of stories over the course of this year about city employees' use of city vehicles. The former chief of staff, Jared Kupiak, was found to be using a city car after leaving his job. Another city employee was driving a city car while drunk. How have we addressed this problem now moving forward? What's going to be the policy as far as city employees using city vehicles?
Well, first of all, is any employee, whether it's my chief of staff or sub-director, any conduct that is inappropriate would be dealt with very harshly. And I think that I feel very good of having taken a position that there are going to be serious consequences to anybody who violates the policy or the law, and they're going to be dealt with. This has been an ongoing conversation that we started last year and this year during the budget. Initially, there were 75 vehicles. During the budget process, that was reduced to 53 and to 59. And it's recently been reduced to, I believe, 45. There's only 9 general government vehicles that have take-home privileges. Only three of those are pickup trucks that are used by DPW to respond to emergencies. So we've scaled down the number. I'm going to continue to work on that number. Look, if we could get to a point that we have one or none vehicles and it doesn't compromise public safety, that's great. We're in a fiscal situation where we should be looking for all the savings. And that's my goal, to do that, but to do it in a way that it doesn't compromise public safety or an adequate response to an emergency.
Jenna Carlesso, what are people saying to you around this issue? It's obviously, from an outsider's perspective, not covering the city of Hartford each and every day, it's something that has been on the front burner. It's certainly one of the things that ended up being the demise of Jared Kupiak, the last chief of staff. What are people around the city saying about this? Is this a big issue on people's minds?
I've heard a lot about it. I think it's a little confusion on sort of what the rules are, you know, why so many people have had vehicles. I understand some of them are collective bargaining.
Collective bargaining, and also you need to understand that the previous administration entered into these long-term lease agreements of these vehicles, which I've been working very hard to reduce. So we can't, you know, I don't want to be in a situation where I just write out a check to have a bunch of cars just sit in a lot. We have to do this in a way that as these leases expire, we continue to reduce, we continue to make economies, and that we continue to make sure that our employees understand that if you violate the policy, and there is a vehicle use policy, which is has been in place for a while, and it's being updated to bring it up to speed in terms of the IRS regulations, as well as my policy position on the issue. The policy is clear, you know, and it's to some degree, it's common sense. If you are a city employee, whether it's a take-home vehicle or not, you're not supposed to drive it while you're intoxicated. It's common sense. And any employee that doesn't understand by now the consequences of what that can do to your job, let alone your personal safety, security, and life, as well as getting in trouble with the law and being fired, I think I don't know what else I can do to send that clear message across.
When your union negotiations reopen, I know it depends on the union.
Absolutely.
Will you take that off the table?
I'm not going to wait for the union contracts to be expired. I've actually given instructions to our corporation counsel and my chief of staff to make sure that as we move forward right now in the concessions discussion, that that issue comes up for discussion. So I'm not going to wait. I'm doing that right now.
There are a few more issues I want to get to. You know, not too very long ago, we were out at the University of Connecticut, and we sat down in a circle very much like this and talked with Susan Herbst, the president of the University of Connecticut, talking about their move of the West Hartford campus to downtown Hartford. And it's something that I think a lot of people are looking forward to. You mentioned it earlier. It's going to bring some life, some vibrancy downtown. There has been a dispute, though, between the city and the University of Connecticut over where exactly that campus is going to be built. And in our conversation with Susan Herbst, she said essentially that has been resolved. They're looking at building around the old Hartford Times building, which is adjacent to the Front Street development, right next to the Wadsworth Athenaeum. The city's been pushing them toward some other locations. One of the things she said to us was, UConn doesn't want to build on a frontier. They don't want to build in a space that isn't built out right now. They feel it's very, very important to build someplace where there's already life and vibrancy and things happening, which sounds pretty good. It's saying that, yeah, there's life and vibrancy and things happening on Front Street. That said, is that the ideal location for a University of Connecticut campus, downtown Hartford?
Well, first of all, I want to be a little bit more optimistic about this. There has never been a dispute. There was a process by which different locations, including the city, proposed different suggestions or different plans for building of UConn. The UConn's number two choice happened to be the city's first choice. And I think that our objective was more to be incorporated into the discussion. We had our own set of reasons as to why their choice number two was our choice number one. And ultimately, you know, my priority is to make sure that the work that I've been doing in terms of bringing UConn to the city materializes. That's objective number one, regardless of what the actual location is. Now, with regards to the selection that they've chosen, which is a Times building, we're supporting the effort. We're supporting the effort to do the due diligence, to make sure that we assist them in the process of bringing this to a reality, if that is the appropriate site and it meets the requirements of the due diligence. The reason why we had wanted a location north of downtown was to hopefully spark a series of development that would be beneficial to the city in terms of turning what is now a sea of parking lots into a sea of opportunity for development for our city.
Well, and that's what I was essentially getting at. In my small dispute with the president of the university, it came down to this. Should the state's flagship university be in the business of helping to create that vibrancy in a place where it doesn't exist now, or should it take the safer route, a route that is essentially going to build someplace where, frankly, and Ken Goslin can tell you this, Ken, there's some pretty good commercial opportunities now down and around Wadsworth Athenaeum and down around there in a way there haven't been for years. You've been watching this for years, Ken. This is actually something that could make some money for the city.
Right. Well, you're actually starting to see, you know, leasing take place down there. For so long, there was nothing down there. It was just, you know, people joke about tumbleweeds, but we're actually starting to see some life down there, and people are going down there. I've gone to the movie theater several times, and I'm starting to, you know, when I first started going, there weren't very many people in there, and now, you know, I've been a few more people there. So there is more life going in there now.
You know, I don't have to get along with anybody, so I'll just come out and say, I think UConn's attitude is disgusting. I actually do think that we have to talk quickly about the history of this. This property, as Ken just said, has taken forever to turn into a commercially viable and potentially property tax-paying property. Front Street, I mean, contrast Front Street, which costs, I mean, the whole Adrian's Landing thing costs about $1 billion in public money. You know, contrast that with what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, iConnect, where you take like $65,000 and you actually get stuff. I mean, maybe it's not going as fast as we want it to, but you get stuff happening with indigenous businesses, people who really live here. It's not about trying to get the Hard Rock Cafe to come in here. So Front Street, which has really taken a long time, iConnect's taking a little bit of time. Front Street's taken a long time. Finally, it's turning into prime real estate. It's the tenderloin right now, and UConn wants to cherry pick that. They're a public institution. They're not going to pay property taxes. They should go someplace where they can upgrade the property. They should be over next to Capital Community College anyway. It makes sense to get an educational cluster going over there, and they shouldn't be taking this property off the property tax rolls. That's disgusting, and it's an elitist attitude that is unbecoming a public university. They should be helping out, not grabbing the choices piece that's on the table right now.
My objective was to improve relationships with the different partners.
I took care of that. Don't worry about that.
To make sure that we continue. I mean, I think that the fact that over the last couple of years, the pace of bringing Front Street to the point that it is now where it's almost fully rented, Capitol Grill, Montana Grill, the Infinity Hall, the Spotlight Theaters, is because I think that there's been some effectiveness on my administration in terms of working together with CERTA, working together with the state to cause that to happen. I think I want to take that up a notch and let the university system and UConn and everybody else know that when it comes to anything that happens in the city, the mayor, the council, the local folks need to be significant stakeholders and partners in that effort.
But just to that point, and one of the things that the president said is, we shouldn't feel as though this first foray into downtown is the only foray into downtown, perhaps.
Right.
That said,
how
do you develop that space on the north side of the highway? That space that has been, if Colin's talking about tumbleweeds that have been blowing down the street and Front Street for years and years, there's been tumbleweeds there for decades. How do we develop that now if not the state's flagship university coming in?
UConn has competition. There's other universities that are eager to also come into Hartford. So that's a possibility. Thomas Diller.
Do you have any names for us? What can you tell us about this?
No, but I can tell you that we've been working together.
It's the University of Phoenix, isn't it? I'm just kidding. Please.
No, it's not Chatterall College, yeah. And it's not the University of Phoenix. Look, Thomas Diller has been working very hard to make sure that we get consultants in to help us get the latest data and information regarding what are the best possibilities for downtown North. We've gotten back those reports. We have a housing study. We have a retail study that we did for that area. We have some plans that we're working on. In October, we'll be ready to really provide some more information to the public and some clarity in terms of some good options for that area. We're very active, and we want to really make sure that we take advantage of what is this crescendo that I mentioned to before in terms of building more housing, building more retail opportunities, and making sure that our city has a renaissance. We're due for a renaissance.
Ken, go ahead.
I just had a quick question going back to UConn down at the Times Building. The Hooker Brewery was also interested in going in there, and I know that the city seemed to be supportive of that as well. What are you doing anything to try to get the brewery still to come to the city, or
absolutely,
were they looking?
Absolutely. We're still engaged with the brewery. We want to make sure that we continue to work with them. State Economic Development Authority. We've been having a lot of stuff. The potential for the city to really continue to provide entertainment as an economic development tool is important. We just had Envision Fest this weekend. We had over 20,000 people. Sunday, we had a Connecticut cycling event here that also brought a lot of activity to town. People are very happy. People want to see that activity. People are responding to that activity. We got to take grasp of these opportunities to make sure that we seize this moment. I was telling my media director this morning, I felt something that made me very happy. I saw about 10 to 12 people walking their dogs in Bushnell Park.
One of the dogs is here right now.
One of the dogs is here in the audience.
His name is Lucas. You know? He's very interested in the Keeney Park situation. He brought his Frisbee with him.
He brought a Frisbee.
We have people that are getting more passionate about gardening. We got Mike McGarry here. Very passionate about gardens and urban farming and beautifying our properties by having gardens. Let's take advantage of this apparent interest of people within our city and from without our city to make our city great again. We're a great city. We're a great city. We have great people. We got great treasures in the city. Let's move forward and make this city great.
Pedro Segarra is the mayor of the city of Hartford. He joined us for the first segment here of The Wheelhouse. Very good to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
When we come back from our break, we'll continue our conversation with Colin McEnroe, Jenna Carlesso, Ken Goslin. We'll also bring in Greg Bordenaro from the Hartford Business Journal. We'll tackle some of the other news that's happening in Hartford and around the state this week. Coming up next in The Wheelhouse, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're broadcasting from the iConnect storefront space in downtown Hartford. We're on Trumbull Street in Hartford 21. In case you're not sure exactly where we are, we're right underneath the marquee of the Excel Center. And I'm here with Colin McEnroe, of course, as usual, in the wheelhouse, and we're talking about the week's news. It is an interesting space, and it's a little different feel, Colin, being downtown with people walking in and out. We've done these pop-up storefront things before. The mayor, just a moment ago, Pedro Segarra, was talking about this idea of enlivening downtown storefront spaces. On October 11th, I believe, the first of these businesses is going to be moving in Hartford Prints, a company that we featured on the show before. Do you think something like this works where we can actually open up some of these storefronts, get some local small businesses downtown, and it starts to enliven Hartford?
I think it is what works. You know, I mean, I think we saw, not to keep harping on Adrian's Landing, kind of what doesn't work all that well, a huge expenditure of money on bricks and mortar in an area that isn't intricately kind of tied into downtown and isn't really based on indigenous business. I think iConnect is great. I mean, obviously, it's a Band-Aid. You know, it's a stopgap. It's not a permanent development solution. But to get some of these spaces performing somehow, creating critical mass, and what one of the things that people like about cities is the sense of serendipity. I'm walking along in a city and I see something I didn't expect. That's one of the things that's great about cities and not so great about suburbs usually. And so there today there were people walking along who did not expect to find a radio show here. Some of them have walked in and stayed too. That's, you know, the kind of collective intelligence of cities, which you've done shows on. That's sort of part of that, that idea that you'll encounter something that wasn't on your radar.
Jenna Carlos, so what do you see as the outgrowth of projects like this when we start to see small businesses that we haven't seen before coming downtown? Do you get a sense in covering the city each and every day that there's an increasing vibrancy around downtown? And where do you think there's still work to be done from what you're seeing?
Yeah, I've seen, like Ken said, on Front Street, people are finally starting to come in there. I know there's been a lot of changeover in businesses along Pratt. I know iConnect is part of that, and I think it's Hartford Prints that's going in on Pratt Street now. But that more permanent businesses there, I think, would be great.
Well, what does it take to get more permanent businesses downtown, Ken, do you think?
Well, I think one concern I have about iConnect is that, okay, it's a shorter-term thing. It's a temporary thing to try to encourage people to come here, show that, you know, business can survive. But long-term, I'm wondering if they can afford the rents that they may have to eventually pay if they're going to be here permanently. So that, to me, is a concern. Until you get more people coming downtown, it's kind of like a chicken-egg thing almost. You know, you just have to have the people coming so the businesses are successful. But at the end of the day, it's what they have to pay for the space. So that is a concern.
You've been following this as well. Greg Bordenaro from the Hartford Business Journal is here. What has been your take on a project like this?
I think iConnect is a good idea because I think downtown Hartford in particular, its sweet spot should be small businesses. And I know one of the concentrations for a lot of landlords downtown has been to try to bring in those national chains because of the high rents that they charge. So I think the small businesses, if they focus on that, and if they could sort of get a grounding, which is what this test is as for iConnect, I think it's a better strategy. The national chains, I don't think, are going to come until we have more people living downtown and more people coming on weekends and after hours, after the workday.
Now, the mayor just a moment ago was talking about some of the other jobs that are coming downtown, and it's something you've been looking at. There are actually some more businesses, larger businesses, that are setting up shop and trying to bring jobs down to downtown Hartford.
Yeah, one of the biggest ones is Harvard Pilgrim, which is a Massachusetts nonprofit health insurance company that's going to be entering Connecticut. They just opened up in City Place. They rented about 8,000 square feet. They have about 6 employees in there right now, but they hope to hire, they hope to have about 30 to 40 people in there by the end of 2014. It's going to be a boost to Hartford and shoring up its title as the capital insurance of the world. It's also going to help the insurance market, too, because we're getting another insurance competitor here, too. So,
Well, one of the things, Ken, that we've talked about for years is there has to be this mix of people working downtown, people living downtown. Where do you think that stands right now? How are we doing as far as the building both that mix of filling up the commercial space that's open right now and all the residential space that's open?
Well, there's certainly a lot of plans on the books for more residential down here. You know, we're looking through initiatives to adding 1,000 units over the next few years, many of them studio and one-bedroom apartments. So that's going to be integral to getting people to live down here, but even more will probably need to be done after that. There is some frustration that there's about 8-10 proposals out there. No, there's no shovel in the ground yet on any of them. They're very difficult and complex to finance, so that's part of the problem. But I think we just want to see one get going. We may see that in November down at Front Street.
Before we turn too far away from some of the city government stuff we were talking about in the first segment, Jenna Carlesso, this audit commission, usually we don't spend that much time talking about audit commissions on where we live, but it seems as though there's an awful lot that is happening in the city that we're finding out about and that it's taking a look at. Aside from the Keeney Park situation, which you mentioned earlier, the disrepair of the golf courses, the audit commission is discussing some other issues. What's on its agenda right now?
Boy, a lot of stuff in their meeting today, actually. The city vehicle audit has been ongoing for a month or two now. They've had requests. I think most of the requests, complaints that they've had, they follow up on. They're looking into the legality of the payout, the final payout to the mayor's former chief of staff, Jared Kupiak.
And in just a moment, we'll actually be throwing open our floor to some questions from our audience here. And we have gathered some people in our iConnect space in downtown Hartford, if you want to join us. It's right underneath the Excel Center marquee. It's in Hartford 21 on Trumbull Street. I'm John Dankowski, and this is where we live. Colin, one story we didn't talk to the mayor about, but we've been sort of interested in watching here, is in the West End, right on the border between Hartford and West Hartford, there's a dispute over a food pantry and whether or not that's an appropriate use of a space that is essentially residential. It's been a little bit interesting to watch, and it's one of those unusual NIMBY battles that we tend to see in the suburbs, not maybe necessarily as much in the city.
This is obviously, I don't know, it's so complicated here because the West End really, obviously, talk about a tenderloin. It is a really incredibly desirable place to live. But they do get huffy about stuff pretty easily in the West End. Of course, they had a big battle about a crack school going in there. Now you're seeing it with a food pantry. Would have been interesting to talk to the mayor about it because, of course, where the mayor lives pretty much abuts this place. I mean, they couldn't be much closer together. It doesn't seem as though this should be that big a problem. There's not a lot of traffic associated. I mean, most of the people who come there come by public transportation or walk or something. It's not like, you know, people's SUVs are pulling up there to get their food. So I'm not quite sure that, I understand the mentality of the West End and that they just don't want this stuff. But they're in a city, I don't think it's palatable for them to say, we just can't live with it.
Jenna, can you tell us a little bit more about the story and where tensions are around this? Where tensions are, where this stands right now in this dispute between the West End Civic Association and this food pantry?
I haven't been covering that myself, but from what I've read, it seems like the lines that are backing up into the streets have been causing some of an issue.
Well, one thing that we haven't really talked about as we talk about the city of Hartford is some of the neighborhoods. And I think often when we come downtown to do something like this, we focus on downtown real estate and we focus on what's happening to bring big businesses in or UConn redevelopments. What are some of the things that are actually happening in the various neighborhoods of Hartford that we should be maybe paying a little bit more attention to? What's something that rises to your plate on City Line, the blog that you write for the Hartford Current, Jenna?
I mean, they've been sort of trying to draw in the neighborhoods to different initiatives. The big thing I can think of that they're still getting out is this new marketing plan. Hartford has it, and they're trying to incorporate that within the different neighborhoods. I think they've started with some of the corporations, the businesses, and I know there was a plan at one point to move that out into the local neighborhood groups and sort of bring them in to link the neighborhoods more to the downtown.
Ken, how about you? Any thoughts about that? I mean, when we focus so much on downtown Hartford, we focus so much on the redevelopment in just a few square blocks, I think what we've heard often, and Colin's made a few references to Adrian's Landing, is that almost everything we talk about seems to then be focused on what happens downtown, and the folks in the north end, the south end, the west end all say, what about us? What about development for us?
Well, there's a really interesting project, or I don't know if I'd call it quite a project yet, at the old Hartford Office Supply building, which I've been writing some about. And this is a building that's been in foreclosure several times, out of foreclosure. There was supposed to be an auction this past weekend. That was canceled. The tax bill was paid. But what is hope there, or the developer that's interested in doing something there, is creating housing there. It's still a little vague yet what exactly they want to do. They do say affordable. They have said affordable. They're looking for those some funding for that. So that is something that's kind of seen as kind of key to Frog Hollow, to that whole thoroughfare there, because there's a retail component there. And it's been vacant now for, 10 years or so. So if something would happen there, it could help that area.
What about any development ideas around this new busway? It's Connecticut Fast Track that's going to be coming in from New Britain, and there's all these stations that are being built along the way. Places like Newington see this as a potentially a real boon for them. There have been some disputes over where the stations are going to be built and some roads that have been closed down. Are there any big development opportunities that you guys are seeing around these hubs?
Well, I think that, Constitution Plaza, where there's a proposal for downsized housing there. The thought is where we go along the routes here, that there could be housing that could be built up and other, retail components. So that's, kind of some of the thinking, but that's still far, somewhat in the future.
At the Hartford Business Journal, what are you guys taking a look at as far as Fast Track? Because obviously around the state, there've been jokes about this busway, this roadway to nowhere. But at the end of the day, this is a massive project that is going to provide a pretty quick commute for people connecting from New Britain through a few towns into downtown Hartford. Are you guys seeing this as a boon?
I think the businesses that are going to be located along the Fast Track line see it as a big opportunity. And there are development projects that are starting to creep up around some of the tracks. There's also a question of what's going to happen to Union Station, for example, downtown Hartford. That's a possibility of further development in that area. But it's going to bring people to those areas, which is the key, which is what businesses and developers are seeing. Whether or not projects actually come to fruition, I think it's a wait and see of how many people actually use the busway. So there's still uncertainty about that.
One thing I wanted to ask you is, as I'd asked these other folks in the Hartford Current about the other neighborhoods, and in what you're looking at the Hartford Business Journal, is there a sense that development outside of downtown Hartford is something that is happening? Are you telling stories right now about things that are working outside the central city?
I think one of the interesting things to watch out for is the hospitals, St. Francis and Hartford Hospital. They're always expanding, particularly Hartford Hospital. They've actually bought up some dilapidated buildings along their campus, and they're going to convert those into some physician spaces and also office spaces for their medical staff. So I think Hartford, and particularly the areas around downtown Hartford, could really leverage the hospitals in terms of growth and new development opportunities.
Greg, when that happens, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I don't know whether you may or may not know the answer to that. Is it always off the tax rolls? In other words, hospitals are... they often function like profit-making institutions, but they are technically not, and they don't pay property taxes. And it seems to me as they do these things, which are kind of physician offices, which ordinarily wouldn't be nonprofit unless they existed under the rubric of the hospital. Is this all going to be non-tax-performing property?
One of the challenges for the city is that there is a huge tax-exempt base, and hospitals are obviously tax-exempt. It depends on each of these developments. Sometimes they'll form an LLC private company to open up some of these physician offices.
God bless them for doing that.
Yeah. But a lot of the hospital's expansion, the downside is that it is nonprofit and it won't necessarily expand the city tax rolls, but it does help to give a facelift to some of these areas around downtown.
And Colin, I mean, you made reference to this before with the University of Connecticut. Clearly, this is something that's bugging you this morning, but I think it's an important issue. Look, we see cities like Bridgeport. We've heard about this in New London. We've heard about this in New Haven, certainly. Our cities are hemmed in geographically. There's not very much square footage. There's not very much space. And then luckily in Hartford, we have this beautiful Keeney Park and Goodwin Park taking up a lot of the space that we have. And then we have hospitals and universities and lots of not-for-profit organizations taking up the available real estate. If there's no taxable space, it's awful hard to run a functioning city.
Yeah, and I mean, that begins to affect everything. It's why it costs $43,000 in taxes to have a late model Acura here or something. You know, I mean, it's really, really expensive in some ways in terms of taxes to live in Hartford, and you want it to be really attractive for people to live in Hartford. And part of the problem is all these properties that don't actually pay any taxes. And I think ultimately that whole payment in lieu of taxes formula is going to have to be looked at somehow, particularly if the hospitals are a big growth engine here. I mean, part of the irony of all this, though, is just to back to one of Ken's earlier points, the idea that that some of these iConnect businesses wouldn't be able to stay here because the rents will go up. When Ken, you'd know better than I do how the rents have fallen. So it would be kind of good news in a strange way if it were suddenly too expensive to do business in downtown Hartford, because this place has been a very, very attractive place to rent, at least in terms of what the rents have been.
Well, not in all the spaces.
Yeah.
Some of the spaces are still quite high. The asking rents are still quite high. And so that does you know, present an obstacle.
Did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I guess one of the long-term challenges for the city is to figure out its tax situation, too, particularly its commercial tax rate, because most of the development that's happening right now is being subsidized by the state. So there's the commercial tax rate in the city is exponentially high compared to most other, well, pretty much every other surrounding town, which hinders private development. So the long-term challenge will be how to figure out how to lower that commercial rate so that we can get more private dollars to fund some of these projects.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to get some thoughts from our audience here at the iConnect space in downtown Hartford on Trumbull Street. Our guests are Greg Bordenaro from the Hartford Business Journal, Ken Goslin from the Hartford Current, Jenna Carlesso, also from the Hartford Current, who writes for the CityLine blog, and Colin McEnroe, the host of the Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR. We'll be right back in the wheelhouse where we live. Good. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up to tomorrow's show, we're going to be broadcasting live from another very different spot. It's harvest time for farms all over Connecticut. That means a growing number of small farms that work on the community-supported agriculture model. In CSAs, members share the risk of a volatile New England growing season and then share in the bounty as well. We'll be broadcasting live from one of my favorite spots, Holcomb Farm in West Granby, talking with the people who grow our food and the mission of getting food to the needy as well. I hope you can join us. If you want to find out more information about how you can be part of our audience tomorrow at Holcomb Farm, just go to Where We Live's Facebook page. Today we're in downtown Hartford at the iConnect space. It's at Hartford 21. We want to thank the folks from iConnect and Mary Corsi for helping to put this together today. iConnect is something that's been brewing throughout the course of this year, and now finally some businesses are getting into spots downtown. We'll be broadcasting here in the future as well on WNPR, not only my show, but the Colin McEnroe Show. And Colin McEnroe always joins us here in the wheelhouse. Colin, what's on your show today?
We're going to be talking to Catholics about Pope Francis, about his recent remarks, and whether they do represent a revolutionary switch that could even lead some of the lapsed Catholics to unlapse and come back. Bishop Peter Rosazzo will be one of our guests today. And we'll sort of talk about, you know, is it a revolution or is it a bait and switch?
So lapsed Catholics are allowed to call into your show today?
We love to hear from lapsed Catholics.
Should I disguise my voice?
Right, no matter what you're doing now.
I may indeed have something to add. I want to welcome in some folks who are in our little guest list. I was going to say, actually, just wandered by on the street to come into our iConnect space. Hi, who's got the microphone here?
I do.
Hi. What's your name, sir?
I'm Basil Talbot, and I'm one of five people and two dogs that walk downtown practically every morning through Bushnell Park. And so we're interested in the pedestrian quality of the city. And I'm trying to figure out how we're doing on the IQUAL plan, which would increase pedestrianism. Already the signs have gone up, which are great. But what's new on closing Gold Street leading into the park? We read that you have a Tiger grant, and I haven't heard much on it recently and haven't seen any activity.
Does
any of your guests know anything about that?
Well, I'll tell you what. You have the microphone there. Mayor Pedro Segarra decided to stay and work here out of the space, so he's still here. So why don't you answer the question, sir?
Thomas Deller was around, but we're on time. By December, we should have the contract out. Gold Street is going to be part of the vision of IQUILT,
And explain what iQuilt is for people who are in, you know, Cheshire today. They don't know what iQuilt means.
iQuilt is, we're working in partnership with the iQuilt board and other stakeholders or travelers and different corporations to basically use, to connect our city using Bushnell Park as the venue by which you branch out and connect all our cultural and arts arts facilities and assets, but also connecting the park with the river. We got a federal grant. It's a $21 million project. Possibly can go as high as 24. The city's putting in 10. The federal government's putting in 11. And it's to facilitate that infrastructure change to connect Union Station out into Bushnell. There'll be a 20-foot promenade along the side of Bushnell Park to accommodate festivals and create more of that recreational passive use of our park. So it's on target. This is a federal grant, so we have deadlines that we need to meet, and we're on track. And you know, obviously, with regards to some of the traffic patterns, there was a proposal to have a one-lane busway lane going counter traffic along Asylum Avenue. Some of the merchants expressed concern about that. I directed our development services director to work with the merchants to come up with other alternatives. Some alternatives will be forthcoming. We want to make sure that everybody's up on board with this plan.
Thank you very much. Mayor, why don't you hand the microphone back? And I know somebody else wants to join the conversation. I think it's our friend Mike McGarry. Mike, hi, how are you?
Oh, Pierre Midland.
So we just got a couple minutes left. Well, what's on your mind? What's your question or thought?
Well, my friend Colin McEnroe is wrong about living in Hartford. If you own property, residential from 1 to 3, it's a bargain. The taxes in Hartford are less than half of the same square footage in West Hartford right across the street.
I think I was mentioning cars, though.
Well, cars are expensive.
Yeah, they're so really expensive.
Buy an old car, you know. Buy an old car. Or keep an old car going. But the problem is that the taxes on the apartments are creeping up. Well, not creeping up, charging ahead. So we've got 2-3 families on one side of the street, the 6 family on the other. The 2-3 families pay $8,000 or $9,000. The 6 family across the street pays $17,000. And this is getting worse every year, 5 to 10% a year, depending on the value. It's actually another Chef versus O'Neill argument. Because who pays the rent? Poor people. Who's benefiting from the low taxes on homes? Fairly well-to-do people. Now, I rent a condo, and my taxes are $100 less a month because I rent a condo rather than an equivalent apartment. Big problem.
Ken Goslin, you want to jump in on this? Is Mike right with his numbers here?
I haven't seen those numbers, but he is correct in the rise that he's talking about.
Yeah, Colin, it's just we have a couple minutes left here. As we, you know, maybe addressing what Mike's trying to say here. There's a lot of pluses and minuses, it seems, right now to a place like Hartford. You and I talk about this all the time. Your hat even says, you have a hat that says, you know, Hartford, the city that actually needs you. There's this really interesting time right now where, theoretically, if you wanted to make a difference in Hartford, you could come in, you could get a space, you could do it affordably. But then there's also some pressures that are keeping some people who wanted to do that from doing that. I mean, do you see this as a good time for the city?
I think it's potentially a really good time for the city, but I would just sort of make the case for human capital. Human beings are what really makes cities work. And not to disparage iQuilt, but every time I see a massive, expensive, multi-million-dollar bricks and mortar project like this, which can never be explained in a satisfactory way in 2 or 3 minutes, no matter who's trying to do it. Nobody can ever explain what iQuilt is. But really, cities are about people. And we do have a pretty interesting class of young people, people in their 20s and 30s, who for various reasons are still here, partly because it's become impossible to go live in New York. But, you know, we have exciting people here. I think we need to invest in them, make sure that the life here that they want is a good life, that they can find good places to live, that they can afford to have their cars in the city, stuff like that.
Well, and of course, as I said before, one of the things that's part of this iConnect project, and we'll be doing more of our broadcasts from down here, Hartford Prince is actually opening up a space as part of iConnect right down the street on Pratt Street, and there are some of those young people maybe making a difference here in Hartford. We're going to have to leave our conversation there. Colin McEnroe, the host of the Colin McEnroe Show, Jenna Carlesso and Ken Goslin from the Hartford Current, Greg Bordinaro from the Hartford Business Journal. Thank you all so much for joining us here in the Wheelhouse on Where We Live.